The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing you hear today constitutes financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Always consult qualified professionals before making decisions about your business.
If a PE firm sat across from you today, what do you think they'd actually be buying? That's a question we're answering today on education. Today, we're going to talk about positioning, and we're going to go through a couple of deals. And, you know, as you look to, you know, navigate, you know, your exit path, you know, thinking through the types of things you need to be looking out for. And today we're going to be focusing mainly on positioning. So to answer that question, you know, what do you think PE firms are buying from you? Some owners may say revenue, some may say their team. But we're going to talk a little bit more strategically about kind of the position that you have for your company, right, Christian?
Yeah. And we had three questions to kind of help you get into the mindset. And the three questions we have is, you know, who specifically do you serve? What do you do better than anyone else? And how painful is it for your customers to leave you? So we're actually going to start with our first case study here. So as you see, we have three companies. We have Vertiv, we have Quaker Valley Foods, and USA Elco. And each of these have a very interesting position. These are all purchases that have made that have been happening, I think I want to say, for the past like 3 years. And they're all very interesting in their own regards because each one has a specific point to why they were actually purchased. Just to kind of give you a quick background on Vertiv, Vertiv was a publicly traded B2B distributor. They had $7.1 billion in revenue in 2023. They mainly did packaging, facility, and janitorial supplies, print products. They had national distribution networks absolutely everywhere, thousands of recurring business accounts, deep supplier relationships, and they were recently taken off of privately off the New York Stock Exchange. The second one is Quaker Valley Foods, which I'm sure you guys all know. It's a family-owned protein distributor. They have fresh frozen beef, pork, poultry, seafood, thousands of SKUs, which are scannable or scan-keeping units. They serve independently or independents and ethnic grocery retailers, a specific underserved customer that has a pretty big base that a lot of big distributors actually ignore. The last one is USA Elco, which is a water treatment chemical business. They manufacture and distribute under one roof. The customers are municipal water authorities, commercial facilities. Demand is regulatory, non-discretionary. Water treatment is legally required. And as you can see, with each of these, we have an estimate for each of the actual purchases. The first one being Vertiv, which was around $2.3 to $2.6 billion. Quaker Foods, unfortunately, we were not able to find exactly how much they got purchased for. We do know there was a $41 million real estate portion attached to that. And we got USA Elco, which was $2 billion. So we'll go on to the first deal. You want to kick this off?
Yeah, sure. And before we get into the specific deals, you know, let's just recalibrate or recap on positioning. So it's not necessarily, you know, what, you know, who you're marketing towards or things of that nature, but it's also, you know, where you're situated within the overall market as far as what a financial buyer may be looking at. So it could be the types of customers you have. It could be, you know, a certain competitive advantage that you have, you know, within a fragmented market. It could be a geographic position as well, an actual physical position. But as we go through here, let's talk through Vertiv Corporation. So as Christian mentioned, a janitorial supply company, you know, they're, you know, that's a fairly commoditized product. So, you know, when CD&R is buying that company, they're not looking at this as some sort of specialized product. It's a, you know, fairly available, you know, type of product, you know, janitorial supply, very fragmented market. Every city, every region has, local distributors that, you know, handle that stuff as well. And then there's also obviously national players as well in the case of Vertiv, but you're not necessarily buying it because of the product. You know, it's a commodity. You can basically find those services anywhere. But if you look at the infrastructure that they have, you know, a huge national network, deep supplier accounts, and recurring B2B accounts, you know, these are fairly entrenched services. And that's, you know, when you look at facility maintenance and, you know, different types of janitorial supply, you're, you know, that's usually the last thing that, you know, a COO or somebody handling the budgeting is really looking to really change suppliers on. So it's a pretty sticky, despite it being a commodity, a fairly sticky service, just because it's not going to be a needle mover, in the state of maturity that it's in right now, right?
No.
So, but, so with all of that, it also provides that position of just being a really appealing buyout option. So, private equity buyers, looks at them, they're seeing, a fairly asset light purchase, relative to the scale that they operate in. We're talking, it's inventory and, payables, receivables, a lot of, working capital, but, very asset light, not a lot of capital expenditure, high CapEx types of items on, for that type of business.
Also, there's not really any specialized equipment usually with that stuff, which is kind of nice, at least within this example, which was, I think, made this help, or at least allow this transaction to go a little bit smoother. Because once again, as you said, they're really looking at this more from an infrastructure idea rather than the actual inventory itself and the receivables. Like, you're going for the actual accounts, the recurring items, so forth and so on. So this is not just based off of what products you may have or the specialty items that you need to create said items. This is really more about the surrounding infrastructure.
Yeah. And again, just the deeply entrenched nature, I imagine some of these accounts have probably, might be decades old for, the type of service they're providing. And, those things aren't just going to be switched over to a new account. So in the cases they do, I imagine there's a very low churn for something like that. So very high dependable cash flows, which makes it, a very, nice target to, apply some leverage onto it as part of the buyout, enables you to buy it at a premium too, just because you have the predictability and you know that the capital structure should work out fairly well, with, potentially a significant amount of leverage, just knowing that predictability of cash flows is coming in, that you are able to, service that debt and, get in at a lower equity price and be able to exit at a higher amount down the road. So particularly makes it interesting for a private equity buyer in that respect. But also to follow up on that point, it also just makes it, well positioned to also take on smaller competitors and, bring it onto the platform.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the main reason is that, you look at CD&R, which for those who don't know is Clayton, Dubilier & Rice, which is the oldest, I think, PE firm. That's been founded in New York for forever. But
I think it was 78. Yeah. I think it was when it was founded.
They're primarily known for like a lot of operations heavy ownership, not just, financial engineering. So when they buy a big stable business, they essentially try to improve how it's run, which is nice because this identifies exactly who your buyer is going to be. But also, Vertiv became their platform company. It allowed them to anchor, some bolt-on acquisitions through, maybe some smaller regional distributors, so forth and so on. But, once you buy scale once, you can then grow the moat around it.
Yeah, exactly. And when you buy it at that premium and you're kind of locking it into a certain multiple, you see this with a lot of very mature industries where you see a fragmented market, it's ripe for consolidation, especially in, at that level of maturity from a fairly macro view. Where you just, this is the time where consolidation is going to start happening just because this isn't an innovative industry, right?
No.
There might be some small, changes to janitorial supply, but overall it's, it's toilet paper, it's cleaning supplies, it's, XYZ, in that space. Nothing is really going to disrupt or change that type of market. So you have a lot of older players. So it's ripe for consolidation. And by having that infrastructure in place, you're able to go after those regional distributors and you're, ideally buying them at a smaller multiple than what you bought Vertiv at. But just by the sum of, each time you make a type of acquisition like that, if you're buying it at an 8 multiple, but you bought Vertiv at a 16 multiple, let's say, that's immediately accretive to the overall value of the company. So that when it does look to exit, it makes it, much more of an appealing exit just because that value is being complete, that you call it multiple arbitrage, but you're getting that value of that smaller regional business to now be worth the same as Vertiv, on a multiple level. And so you're immediately, accruing value on that. So if you have the enough capital to really, you know, make that consolidation work, you know, you're giving yourself a really solid exit for the private buyer. So,
yeah, just to how this translates that kind of help you guys, you know, why does a world-class PE firm pay for a premium? So once again, I think if I'm looking at my notes correctly here, I think they paid a 31% premium. But like, why does a world-class PE firm pay for a premium for cardboard boxes? And it's actually not the products. It's all about the infrastructure. So if you can create a good infrastructure for yourself that has a really stable, you know, recurring revenue source, and, you know, you poise yourself to either become that large purchase or even that smaller regional, you know, you can get a pretty nice multiple for it. It's really all about how the system is actually set up. Because once again, you look at CD&R, they're strictly there to improve the system. They're not there to, you know, fully fix a or clean house, so to speak.
Yeah. And, you know, again, scaling it back down to your business, obviously, you know, Veritiv's a, you know, it's a multi-billion transaction. You know, this isn't, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering why is this company, you know, being brought up when I'm, you know, I have an HVAC company that does, you know, 5 million a year or, you know, something under 10 million a year. How does that translate? Well, you know, some of the fundamentals still apply. You know, you may have a recurring customer base that is highly sticky as well, and maybe B2B accounts, or just you have a customer base that, you know, even if they're not, you know, contractual revenue, might just be a very sticky customer base. But it's also something to keep in mind as you look for, you know, with your ear to the ground, you may hear of, you know, competitors or even, you know, affiliated companies, you know, maybe outside a region, you may have heard it, you know, something, a competitor of yours got bought by a private equity buyer, you know, that might be a hint to start doing your homework too. You know, is this, you know, how are they positioned to be set up for the buyer? And is that something that I can, you know, replicate or position myself, you know, for that type of buyer too? Because a lot of times private equity buyers, they, you know, they follow trends, you know, so if one business is being bought, it's very likely that, you know, if you're positioned properly, you might be next up as well. And, you know, it could be to that, you know, company that regional competitor of yours that was bought by that PE firm, that might be a potential to start a conversation. But if you look at, you know, what they're investing in, you know, that could give you some insight into, you know, how you should position yourself as well. Because it gives you a little bit of a kind of a leading indicator of, you know, is it because I'm in a fragmented market? Is it because, you know, there's something strategic to, you know, the location? Is there, you know, because, you know, you may not necessarily be the platform company, but is there a larger company in your space that is that potential platform company too? And can you position yourself to be a part of that, you know, that bolt-on process as a private equity firm is looking to scale up and, you know, build up their anchoring platform company?
Yeah. So just to go over this lesson again for Veritiv, you know, do you have a B2B accounts that renew without being sold? So that, once again, that is that sticky revenue that Steven is talking about, which is so important and immediately makes you that much more attractive. You know, the second one is your market fragmented? A lot of smaller regional competitors means someone is going to be the consolidator. That very much could be you. And that's what he was discussing as far as, you know, a competitor of yours may have gotten bought out. Are you a foundation or a one-off? So what we're asking there is, would your business be the Veritiv to what CDR is trying to do? And, or are you just going to be the add-on or an additional revenue stream? And it's much better to be that platform and to strive to be that platform, because then it just attracts a larger buyer or a larger fish.
That's right. So as we go on, this one will be a little bit more of a, with Quaker Valley Foods, a little bit of a smaller company, not a multi-billion dollar deal. It's a, as Christian mentioned, it's a food distributor out of Philadelphia, and they have,
which you guys may know him. It's the guy with the Quaker on the around the circle, usually on a lot of products, but yeah, sorry, continue.
Well, it's Quaker Valley Foods, not Quaker Oats. So let's not get it
mixed up. My apologies. I was wrong.
but yeah, it is the Quaker state, nonetheless, Pennsylvania. So, you know, they, so Quaker Valley Foods, you know, they were bought by, was it Hidden Harbor Capital?
Yeah.
Within the past couple of years, it looks like. And they specialize in independent and ethnic grocery stores. So We're talking about a little bit more of a niche in the grocery space. So, you know, high volume, again, a potential, you know, likely a sticky customer base. You're targeting, you know, certain communities that, you know, want to go to that grocery store rather than the Kroger's of the world or the Giant Eagles or, you know, so on and so forth, to get their, supplies. And a lot of times, you know, they'll also be able to, those types of specialty grocery stores also will supply to, your restaurants as well that are specialized in that space. Mm-hmm. So, really a good opportunity, to hit a, you know, it's a very large market, but in a very specialized service. And again, we talked about sticky relationships, but, you know, once you're, you know, a protein supplier or a specialty food supplier, it's very, you know, in a lot of cases, you may be the only one in that city that's providing that service, to those specialized, groups. So another way to, you know, another way of just being completely, you know, dominant within your specialty and your niche. And then, and that's just, you know, and that demand is, you're going to go, you know, these are typically high growth communities and, you know, it just adds to the, you know, not just the recurring, you know, stickiness aspect, but also the opportunity for growth in that space as well. And I was, you know, obviously protein is increasingly in high demand as well.
The Chipotle protein bowls.
Yeah. It's like any, you know, every, any type of fast casual spot, you know, they're trying to up their protein offerings. So, you know, and that everything's downstream from that. So America loves their protein, can't get enough. And so being in that protein distribution space is also very useful as well.
They got like protein chips. They got protein everything, protein drinks. I think some guy actually tried to create a protein water, but that'll be a segment for another one. But just to kind of look at, you know, Hidden Harbor, this is once again, I like to say, you got to know who would like to be an exit for you. So Hidden Harbor is a lower to middle market private equity group. They're really known to kind of do the quote unquote dirty work. They like to roll up their sleeves. They don't really write checks just to buy something, but they usually look for, you know, founder or family owned businesses. And what they do is they like to professionalize them. So in this instance, what Stephen was kind of getting at is they're really buying the customer relationships. The independent ethnic grocery is an all-time high volume, very relationship driven, extremely loyal. So once you're the supplier, they don't switch. So the perishables and the SKU complexity, that's a natural barrier to entry. So this sticky customer base becomes you know, a really good foundation of a platform for a geographical expansion. Family owned is often under professionalized. That's what the upside at PE scales. So when you hear family businesses, you know, it's always great to have them, but you don't always think that they may be run at the highest quality, but we still love them.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, that complexity of, you know, the SKUs that they have, the SKUs, that type of complexity is, you know, a natural moat to the company. It's hard to, very hard to replicate that, you know, when you're adding, you know, all these different product lines into and service lines into your company. And again, it also just makes it as a nice platform as well, as we you know, talked about with Veritiv. But, you know, when you have this type of, you know, complex you know, organization, you know, in terms of handling these different types of product lines, that also, you know, is part of your infrastructure, you know, component as well as too. So, you know, when you look at, again, other regional suppliers, you know, knowing that you're, you know, properly built to be able to handle that complexity allows you to have, you know, the right, you know, you have the team in place, you have the, you know, organizational infrastructure and know-how of how to take on these, you know, future suppliers or distributors. Within, you know, this ethnic and protein independent, you know, supply chain space.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't the biggest food distributor, but they were the obvious choice for a customer. Nobody else was serving well. And the specialty is the position, as we like to say. So I guess we'll move on to the next one here. Oh, my apologies. I forgot we had some questions here. So once again, for your business, you know, are you trying to serve everyone? So broad appeal usually equals, you know, average margins. The most valuable position is we are the obvious choice for the specific customer. How hard is it for your best customer to leave you if switching costs are high, operational complexity, relationships, reliability, you have a moat. And that's the moat that we were discussing. And is your business ready to be scaled? Family owned means less professionalized. And what we mean by less professionalized means that there are some systems that can be improved and there are some items that often can be overlooked within a family business. But that's often what PE buys, the position plus the upside of systemizing it. So once again, they're looking for something that has done very well. And there's a couple of things that they can add to it. But a thing that makes it a little bit more attractive is how hard or sticky are your customers and how important are they to you? So I guess we'll go to USALCO then. So once again, USALCO, probably not a whole lot of people have heard about them. It is a water treatment chemical business. Once again, they mainly serve municipality, water authorities, commercial facilities. So unless you're really specifically within that business, you know, probably less heard of because not too often do a lot of people deal with, you know, commercial water treatment. But, you know, water treatment is legally required, which, you know, allows this to be a little bit more of an attractive business. So the buyer was TJC. TJC is, I believe, the Jordan company. They're a New York middle market PE firm. They have a long track record. I know they specifically do a lot in industrials and chemicals. This was actually a secondary sale, right, from HIG.
Yeah, that's what it appears. It's, you know, none of this is, you know, it's hard to get the full information, but it does look like it was a secondary buyout. So, you know, just, you know, further validation to the you know, for this type of company. And, you know, as Christian mentioned, you know, these are, you know, there's municipal and state level regulations, that, you know, federal regulations. You know, these types of industries, you know, provide that type of regulatory moat, which, you know, those, you know, laws typically only go in one direction in terms of regulation. You know, it's, some stuff may get scaled back over administrations, but on the whole, it's, you know, there's always this, you know, increasing regulatory broadening and overreach. So that just makes, you know, some of these types of companies even much more, you know, difficult to crack into or disrupt. So, you know, if you're able to get into, you know, a company that has this type of protective moat on the regulatory side, it typically just, you know, allows you to help capture, you know, more and more market share and, you know, and get more value over the course of the holding period.
Yeah. So, the main reason why TJC bought this was really what they call a mission critical demand. Municipal customers shop reliability, compliance, and trust. And if you've ever been within a municipal meeting, you know, everything is obviously voted on. So you do have to have a pretty strong track record. Otherwise, you're kind of walking into a lion's den and you'll probably will never get that business. It is recession proof because we all need water. No matter how bad times get, we do need water. Regulatory driven revenue, and they have integrated manufacturing and distribution, which is extremely hard to replicate because once again, you're under such a fine microscope or such a fine tooth comb that you really have to be very cautious on who you are dealing with, because, you know, they're not going to hand these contracts out to anybody because it could be absolutely harmful to, you know, the users of said water. But, you know, essentially they were trying to buy a very defensible essential service platform with pricing power. Now, municipal water systems are, I could go on and on, and on about these, but, you know, a lot of times you'll have sometimes municipal systems actually selling their water and sewage systems to privately owned companies. And even then, they're still held under regulations that are followed by the state. So even if it is a privately owned, you know, water system or a sewage system, they still have to obey by the regulatory rules set forth by them.
Right.
So once again, you're really having that kind of, I don't know how to describe, but really that circle that you have to be within.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, to translate this down to, you know, since smart company, you know, we find this with, you know, companies that provide, you know, road services as well. So like, let's say, you have a, you know, for like road construction and that sort of stuff, you know, something at the more local level that might be a smaller company that's kind of operating that space where you have to have, you know, certain types of crews in place. You know, the people that make the signs even, you know, is a very nice, you know, market, those types of suppliers that, you know, handle that type of, traffic and construction equipment. And even downstream from that, the service company that's actually manning those crews as well is something you might be able to find at a, that could be a little bit more applicable to you if you're, in that smaller, scope, in the lower middle market scope. But those, companies, those types of companies also have, somewhat of a regulatory, mode as well, where, if you have a, could be, a highway contractor that you're the one providing, the safety crews for, something like that. So, obviously, regulatory stuff is a little bit more of a, it's very specialized to, specific industries. That's just a one-off example, but even, even your, plumber and, those types of trades, there has to be, things that have to be up to code, things that, you may have had, over the course of, the business you had, and especially in terms of, new building construction, there's always, more and more, regulations that come into play for, different types of permits. So, if you have, that type of, system in place where you have, the administrators that can, pull those permits or keeping up to date with new, regulations that come in that allow you to stay ahead of the curve as far as, that type of construction, that's something that could be a little bit more, applicable, to you, or if you have that team set up to be able to, nimbly handle the permitting process, be abreast and, be on top of, new regulations and, permitting procedures that come in, that can help kind of protect you from, that plumber that just decides to, get his own truck and start, doing his own jobs where, he may just be relegated to, just, fixing sinks at people's houses, whereas you're more set up to be able to handle new construction builds, more, municipal buildings, commercial construction, that sort of stuff where, it takes a little bit more, expertise and there might be a little bit more complexity. Or again, with the second deal we discussed, allows you to take advantage of that market, relative to, other competitors in your space. So, keeping it down level to where you might be if you're a, $5 to $10 million company, finding avenues where you can, set yourself apart in that respect as well. So, a couple of questions for that as well. So, we kind of touched on this, but if you have, regulations within your industry, how are you using that as an edge, for your company and using that to just strengthen your positioning. Another lesson, this is something we talk a lot about at SCG Edge as we talk to our clients, but, if you were to stop operating, tomorrow, how long would it take for things to break? So, again, that's also about, how good your, customers are and also how good your team is as far as,
your SOPs, your systems, so forth and so on. Like, for instance, in this question, who would stop operating if you disappeared tomorrow? For USALCO, it would be the water system, and nobody likes that to happen. But once again, you can't run. So whenever companies are looking for businesses to buy, they usually like to see if things can be operated without you. So if you wanted to ask yourself kind of a good question, which I'm going to expand upon what Steven said, we usually ask, what would happen if you were to leave your business just for a day? And then what would happen to it if you left for a week? What would happen if you left for 30 days? And if your answer increasingly goes south, meaning things are going to break, a lot of things are going to break, then usually that means that the business is highly dependent upon you, which is not really easy to do whenever you're looking to obtain another business because everything is so reliant upon you. So to go back to kind of Steven here, it's all about your operations, your SOPs, and your team, making sure that everybody is set in place.
Right. And the flip side to that too is what happens to your customers if you stop operating as well. If you were to stop working, if your customers or your best customers, if you went away tomorrow, like they could still call somebody else the next day and, figure it out. It may not be, 100% of the same, product or service you provide, but they can get 95% of the way there. But again, that's why regulation is kind of important too for some of these industries, is because 95% doesn't cut it. But even if it's, I know we're talking about regulation here, but even outside of that regulatory framework, if you have, a customer base that if you were to leave, regulations aside, would be in, you know, a lot of trouble without you being able to provide that service or that product. You know, it still kind of lends credence to that, you know, stickiness of your customer base and, you know, potentially even an opportunity to, you know, deepen that further. I don't want to get too far out of scope, but, you know, other service lines, ways to embolden that customer relationship, or even, you know, improve your pricing with them as well, as you look to, you know, make sure that things are, you know, more equitable. If you're a mission critical aspect to them and, you know, you're very hard to replace, you know, that's something to also consider, is your pricing.
Yeah, that kind of leads us to our last question is, have you been through a major ownership or leadership change and kept your customers? Meaning, you know, have you fired a GM, hired a GM, and, you know, if your position survived the transition, then it's real. You got a good system. That's what the buyer usually looks to underwrite. So I guess we'll go on to, you know, our last sort of couple segments, which is our framework, which is, you know, to go back through, we brought these up for a reason. So the main one is, you know, we like to look for recurring predictable cash flow, a customer who can't easily leave, platform potential, infrastructure that's hard to replicate. So for the first one, you know, we like to see contracts, relationships, auto renewals, not project work, meaning you're not doing one job at a time and you're really waiting for that next project. We'd like to see some sort of outside income coming in, which is to go back to that, I believe, was the Veritiva. And then a customer who can't easily leave, switching costs is the moat. The harder to leave, the more defensible the position. That's what we went over with the Quaker Valley Foods, which is obviously the ethnic and independent buyers that they like to have within the complex systems. And then platform potential, a foundation other companies can be bolted onto. Scale matters more than size. So that was also the CDR example as well. And then infrastructure that's hard to replicate. That's what we were talking about with a lot of the, actually just the previous example. So supply chain depth, supplier relationships, market presence built over years, not months. This really matters a lot too. And I think this is actually a pretty good starting for us as well for this, at least the education podcast, which by the way, our two producers were so happy to name education. Get it? Cause we're SEG Edge.
Yeah. So, you know, key takeaway, you know, as we talk about your customers and how you're positioned to a potential buyer, you know, keep this in mind. As we had mentioned, how long would it take for your best customer to replace you if you were to leave tomorrow or disappear? So, you know, 1 week as a commodity, you know, 6 months, decent position, 1 year plus private equity buys. Now this obviously isn't set in stone. You know, we mentioned Veritiv is a, you know, commodity type business, but they have that complexity of their operations. They have that national scale.
You got the systems that, and the infrastructure
that, baby, you know, makes it a little bit more difficult to do, but, you know, but for your, you know, key place, especially as you're operating in a, you know, likely a lower middle market space, if you're listening to our podcast, you know, these questions will matter, you know, a lot more, where even if, you know, you may even just think you're a commodity, but, you know, that's also why we're talking about positioning is, you know, can you take, you know, can you add complexity to your business that makes it harder to replicate, you know, not in a haphazard way, but doing it because it's getting you to a more specialized space where you're able to command, you know, a premium for your service, you know, that sort of thing that makes it a little bit more difficult for your customers to switch. So, or if your customers are just, you know, so, you know, sticky to you that they, you know, wouldn't want to leave, you know, there's a lot of different ways to interpret, you know, this type of thing where even if you're commodity service, you may still be, you know, fairly entrenched with your customers that it actually, when you actually look at it, it's a little bit more specialized than you may think on first glance.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess some closing thoughts are, you know, you want to run this test on every customer relationship you have. You know, we have our three deals or one lesson, you know, build the position, the money will then follow. If that makes sense. But we'd like to thank you guys for tuning in and listening in. Once again, I am Christian and this is Steven, and we have officially concluded our first podcast of education.
Yeah.